Broadcasting live from Roberta's in Bushwick, Brooklyn, you're listening to HeritageRadioNetwork.com.
Ich bin Elke de la Sota.
And I'm Chad Turnbull.
Mit Savorian Wines haben wir zwei katalanische Weine, Bogatel aus Terralta und El Raval aus Montsant, in die Staaten gebracht. Beide sind biodynamisch und unter $15 zu bekommen. Wir arbeiten mit Winzern in der vierten Generation zusammen. Chad und ich sind sehr stolz auf die Zusammenarbeit mit Jason Colucci und der Morning After Show. Die gleiche Hingabe, die Jason für seine Show aufbringt, haben wir für unsere Weine.
Für mehr Infos und wo es unsere Weine gibt, klick auf den Link Savoyan Wines.
What are we drinking here? What are we drinking here?
Rienar Rosé from Magnum.
That is the general manager of Monkey Bar, Belinda Chang, here in studio. We're going to get to her in the second segment. We're drinking some amazing champagne. Also, obviously, the sponsors, wine, Bogatel, El Raval in studio as well. I'm going to jump right in. We had sort of a schizophrenic day yesterday with the weather. It was kind of wacky. I don't know. It was sort of, I was waiting for John Cusack to show up with a 2012 waterfall to happen. It was rain, it snowed, it was cold, it was slush, and it happened all day. And all of a sudden today, this is perfect New England kind of fall day here in Bushwick, Brooklyn, live at Roberta's. Jack Inslee, executive producer in the studio. Thank you, Jack, for all your help.
No problem.
We're going to jump right in with our first person. He's a producer on the show. His name is Keith Braga. He's doing a five-part Ken Burns series on what restaurant did I put you in?
Maxwell's Plum.
Maxwell Plums, which I associate with more of the... everyone always says Studio 54 or Studio 54, and I always say yes, but there was another restaurant where everybody who's a top restaurateur now in New York City, anyone who works in the city, worked at Maxwell Plum's, whether they were a busboy or, you know, a host or a bartender. They all came up there. What's going on with this project?
Well, we're just, I hope, would be able to trace the evolution of this restaurant that was opened in 1966 over on 64th Street and First Ave, and it was... something that sprang about during the commercial boom, which First Ave at that time was mostly residential up in that area, and now here came Maxwell's Plum, and it was something that nobody had ever seen before.
Let's just give a little bit of... This is the same person who did this, Warner Leroy, also had Tavern on the Green, which is a whole nother Ken Burns Brooklyn Bridge segment.
Yep.
But he started... tell me about him.
Maxwell's Plum is overlooked. It's usually a side note. They bring up Tavern on the Green. They bring up the Russian Tea Room. They bring up the Potomac down in D.C. and the other Maxwell's Plum over in San Francisco. There's not too much focus on Maxwell's Plum. And in one of these posts, I read how somebody, a subscriber, was detailing that it's overlooked. It's a piece of New York restaurant history that is overlooked, and it was a very important place.
It was. I was happy enough to work at Tribeca Grill for many years under Drew Nieporn, and in the bar in Tribeca Grill is the old Maxwell Plum's bar, and I was always would be like fixing a drain and something, like calling a plumber and something would happen, and be around this bar, and it. It goes so far, being a restaurant geek like myself, to be around history like that. Restaurants, you know, American restaurant history has about 100 to 150, 200 years old. I mean, there's a lot of stuff out there, but the really recorded stuff and all the people that we see, it was more of an oral tradition. Now there's a lot of people with all the blogs and all the information out there. So I'm really excited about this. When do you think you're gonna?
I am too.
When do you think you're gonna have something for us?
I'd say next week. I mean, there's so much to delve into. This guy, Warner.
You heard that, guys? Next week, Keith Braga
brought it over the top. He brought it over the top. He made an experience. He worked in the theater a lot, and that's what he wanted to equate the restaurant business with. The show must go on.
Thank you, Keith Braga. I'm going to hold you on to that. I'm going to go into my first guest, who is a call-in. Lee Schrager is here. His expertise is something that most people don't appreciate. He organizes great campaigns of people that bring together food and wine. Like Eisenhower's D-Day, Schrager's D-Day happens all the time. The bringing together of great personalities, large format, is a logistical campaign in itself. Over a decade ago, he started what was then the South Beach Food and Wine Festival. That festival has grown into 55,000 strong and also sprung upon us, the New York City Food and Wine Festival. And it's in its infancy, the L.A. Food and Wine Festival. He is here now to talk about his career and what he sees a festival headed in the next decade. Lee Schrager, are you there?
I am here. Good afternoon.
Thank you for calling in. Where are you now? Where are you? What city are you in right now?
I am actually in Miami, but en route to New York later this evening.
Miami? Lee is in Miami. I really wanted to talk about your history, because I feel like you, a lot of people outside of the business or people that are like watch Food Channel and stuff know who you are, but can you give us a brief history about how the LA the South Beach Food and Wine Festival started and how, you know, all that stuff?
Well, the South Beach Wine and Food Festival started for my 40th birthday, so it must be about 12 years ago. Stephen Reichlin, who's the author of Barbecue Bible and Barbecue Planet and Planet Barbecue, invited me to go to the Food and Wine magazine's Classic in Aspen about 12 years ago for a birthday gift. And I kind of got there and looked at all this amazing, food universe, and I said, isn't this a great location in the beautiful mountains of Aspen? And I said, the only thing, you know, that could match this would be doing something very similar on the beautiful beaches of the Atlantic and South Beach. And that's really how it happened. On a plane ride home, I kind of said I should start this. And the next morning I made some phone calls, sat with some friends, and that's the beginning of the Food Network South Beach Wine and Food Festival.
Now, were you working at the hotel this time, or were you working for Southern when you made that decision?
I actually was working with Southern. I spent about 20 years with Intercontinental, starting as a room service manager while I was still in school, and leaving the company almost 20 years later as a VP of food and beverage for the company worldwide. So I joined Southern in 2000. So this is probably in spring of 2000, June of 2000, going to Aspen with the Reichlins.
Now, on behalf of the New York Food and Wine, I really want to thank you for just giving a boost to the New York City economy. People could say whatever they want about anything, just with the festival and stuff, but it brings a lot of people in here. There's a lot of restaurants that normally don't get a lot of appreciation where you host stuff. For example, you have the Burger Bash, Meatball Madness. On behalf of just people kind of who normally don't dine out, watch a lot of food TV, they come in. Have you seen the New York City Festival grown as much as you've seen the South Beach grow?
Probably quicker. New York has grown much quicker. I can't say much quicker, but, South Beach 12 years ago when we were starting it, the food scene was really, the network was kind of still new, and before everyone was blogging and before everyone was on Yelp and everyone was, everyone was a food critic. So I would say that South Beach grew quick, but New York grew quicker. I think that, when you look at New York is now, we just finished our fifth year, pretty amazing. And it was successful from the get-go, as was South Beach, but South Beach started off small, where New York didn't start off small. From the get-go, we were big in New York. We've gotten bigger, but in the first year of South Beach, in 2001, we had 6,000-7,000 people. The first year of New York in 5 years ago, we probably had, 25,000 people. So we started off bigger here and then grown, at the same rate every year like we did South Beach, to the point where we have the same number of people almost attending the New York Festival as we do the South Beach Festival, the big difference being that we have to produce twice as many events to accommodate them in New York City because of restrictions on venues and number of people we can have.
Yeah, I mean, you're like Jerry Bruckheimer in terms of like producing these things. They're not easy. I assume you have a full-time staff just for New York now. Is that true, or is it kind of pop-up?
No, full-time staff. We have two associate directors and a bunch of event managers and sponsor managers and accountants and advisors. So, it gets bigger as we gear up towards a festival like South Beach. But, they now both festivals are full-time, running businesses, both, not-for-profit. New York raising money for Share Our Strength and the Food Bank of New York City.
I'm currently talking to Lee Schrager from Southern Wine and Spirits of America, Food Network South Beach in New York City, and the Food and Wine Festivals. Is it presumptuous for me to talk about the L.A. Food and Wine, or is that something that you're part of or you're consulting on? I kind of, through my research, saw a bunch of different things. What's that going on with that?
Well, the New York, the L.A. event that I'm involved in and kind of just working as an advisor is called The Taste, and it's produced by Best Events, B-E-S-T, which is Jeffrey Best, who's a great event producer out in L.A., and the L.A. Times, which is a division of Scripps, which owns the Food Network. So I basically joined them this year on their first venture over Labor Day in creating The Taste of L.A., more, you know, in an advisory role, because I live all the way here, and the West Coast is a bit of a trek for me, but you know, we produced an amazing festival this first year, The Taste.
Lee, where's the best Cuban in Miami? Where's the best place to get a Cuban? I don't want you to alienate yourself, but I'm a huge fan of Cuban sandwich, but you're obviously tuned into Miami. You know, is there a spot that pops up?
Yeah, there is. Actually, you know, I was a club owner and restaurateur many years ago in South Beach, and there's a, I still go to, you know, my favorite Cuban restaurant. It's called Puerto Sagua, on a corner of 6th and Collins, right in the center of South Beach. And it's still, nothing has changed 20 years later. It still makes the best Cuban sandwich.
Well, thank you, Lee, for your time. Please come in and before at all your festivals to give a plug. I really appreciate it. I know you're a super busy guy. Anything else you wanted to contribute before you head off?
No, just tell people, you know, tickets are on sale for the 2012 South Beach Wine and Foods Festival, and they can go to www.sobefest.com and look at all the amazing 67 events we have for them the weekend of February 23rd through 26th.
Thank you.
Look forward to seeing you. Thanks so much.
Once again, this is The Morning After. We're going to take a break. We're going to come back with Dr. Brendan from Dr. Brendan Mac Repair. We're also going to go into the Dream Team from Monkey Bar. By the way, that's the best thing that comes out of Wall Street, Money Never Sleeps, that song from David Byrne and Brian Eno. also, you know, they get a couple of good lines there, but I wasn't a fan of that movie. I'm going to jump in right into my first guest here, because I guess we can't get a connection to somebody, but who cares? I have what I self-proclaimed a dream team, because I feel like if... I'm going to make a couple of metaphors here. I'm going to associate Graydon Carter to George Steinbrenner, Ken Friedman to Brian Cashman, and Belinda Chang and Chef Damon Wise to talent. They both wanted to be A-Rod, so they're both A-Rod.
Damon can be A-Rod.
and then I'm going to give my little Charlie Rose interview. I'm talking with Belinda Chang and Chef Damon Wise. They are part of the new team at Monkey Bar, hand-curated by Ken Friedman and Graydon Carter. They encompass a dream team of talent to restore and deliver a New York City and American classic, Monkey Bar. First thing I wanted to ask, and I was interested, did you guys know each other before?
No. Yeah. Never met.
Yeah. And how long, not even in Crossing, because you guys have been around for a while and you're top players in New York City. So.
I heard that Damon was at the Modern after party after the Beard Awards, but I don't really remember most of it, so it's possible.
Nor do I.
Now, Chef, you have a great story, because you had a history with Tom Colicchio and right. That whole craft empire, and then you were interested in doing your own project, and then right. You ran into Ken Friedman, and uh-huh. He sort of like kind of said, hey, come, do you want to be part of Monkey Bar. And can you talk about that?
I left the Craft Empire back in May, and literally on my last day, I got a text from Kenan. He said, I'd like to speak to you.
Amazing.
So I wanted to take some time off. I had been with Tom for 12 years, and I worked like crazy. We opened restaurants together, and I really wanted to take the summer off. And literally, I talked to Ken every other day. He's like, you got to come up here and check it out. You got to come up and check it out. So I did. And the situation that the restaurant was in at the time was appealing to me because I wanted the challenge of cleaning it up.
Yeah.
Because I hate to see a restaurant in that sort of form that needs a little bit of love. So
now when you say, because you had been at a what became a sort of a brand, which is the craft thing, and you kind of wanted to be something where you kind of could create, start from the beginning and make it your own and take that kind of a menu on and do your own sort of
right.
tweak on it. Was that kind of what happened? Or
I just like to cook.
Yeah,
yeah. I've been cooking years.
To quote Steven Seagal in Under Siege, I'm just a cook.
Good answer.
Yeah. But no. It's a tough because it's an interesting project. I mean, for both of you guys, you both have distinguished careers, and it's just an interesting thing for the restaurant industry to see something like that. For the association with working with Graydon Carter and all that brings to it. And Blinda, can you talk a little bit about what brought you over?
Yeah, I think I got a friend request from Ken Friedman.
Oh yeah, I forgot
on
about
Facebook.
That.
It was on a Sunday.
It was actually on OkCupid. It wasn't.
Yeah, that I don't remember. But I was lying in bed, and I don't know why my BlackBerry was in my right hand, but it was. So that's how the Odyssey sort of started for me. And you hear so much from people about how the room is so cool at Monkey Bar, and how people love to go there because they love to sit in those red leather booths, And we think that we can give people other reasons to come. You know, a great wine program and a great bar program and great food to eat as well. I think I'm going to be super stoked when the next person who comes in says, not that I loved Monkey Bar because the room was so gorgeous, but I loved Monkey Bar because I had the best duck liver mousse I've ever had in my life, or I had the greatest glass of champagne ever. So, that's why I'm involved.
Both which we're eating and drinking right now, and I will vouch for it. Thank you guys for both of these things. Most guests don't show up on anything.
Oh,
I
it's Sunday,
that.
Man. We should be eating and drinking.
I wanted to kind of go backwards a little bit and talk about what brought you both you guys here into New York City. I'll start with Chef. Chef, you're originally from Baltimore, but
right.
I think you were in Philly for a little while. And then what kind of brought you to New York City to work?
I think the commitment of people that are here in the restaurant industry and the amount of restaurants and talent that are here was really a driving point for me. I worked for George Perry in Philadelphia, and he said, if you want to be a chef, you have to go to New York City. So that kind of like pushed me over the edge to make the move. And I had met another chef through the years that said, you have to work for Tom Colicchio, you have to work for him. So he's the first person I went to. But there's just such great energy in the city. And people are willing to try different things I think it's a great place to be.
And for everyone listening, this was Tom Colicchio at Gramercy Tavern at the time.
Correct.
This wasn't
correct.
When he left. And you started at Gramercy what year?
Oh, God. I mean, I was with Tom on and off for about 12 years.
Okay.
So.
Wow.
So both you guys are graduates or had worked within the Danny Meyer thing, and you kind
correct.
Of both agree with me with my statement before, not sort of that Danny is a great restaurateur and a good person to work for.
Nobody can see this, but we're both nodding right now.
Yeah.
Nodding very excitedly.
Yeah.
Blinda, I mean, obviously you have the credentials, but you had worked as a sommelier. And did you think, I don't know if you've ever taken on the general manager position, obviously a wine program at the Modern in MoMA is just like being a GM in every other restaurant in the country.
Yeah.
In terms of the amount of time and commitment you have to it. Was that something you had done before or interest?
I've done it once before in San Francisco for a short period of time. I worked for a chef named Laurent Gras at the fifth floor in San Francisco. So,
awesome.
Yeah, so the two of us got to sort of work side by side.
Casually throwing that name
show.
Out.
Yeah. Well, but now I'm pretty excited to be with Damon, even though we'd never really met before sober. We're having a lot of fun at the restaurant, and it's pretty awesome. It's, you have to have... you know, the two people sort of running the two sides of the house, I think, with a good relationship. Otherwise, you're definitely not going to succeed. So I'm pretty stoked that sober, we get along as well.
I'm talking right now with Belinda Chang and Chef David Wise. We're going to take a break right now. We're going to come back. We're going to get a little bit a lighter fare with the two, talk about just, you know, likes and interest in New York City, places they dine out. And then we're going to take a break. We'll come back and speak to them. You guys,
Tennessee. Lord, I've really been real stressed, down and out, losing grass. Although I am black and brown, problems got me pessimistic. Brothers and sisters keep messing up. Why does it have to be so damn tough? I don't know where I can go to let these ghosts out of my skull. My grandma passed, my brother's gone. I never at once felt so alone. I know you're supposed to be my steering wheel, not just my spare tire. But Lord, I ask you to be my guiding force of truth. For some strange reason it had to be. He guided me to Tennessee.
Take me to another place. Take me to another land. Make me forget all. Understand your
yeah.
plan.
Lord, it's obvious we got a relationship. Talking to each other every night and day. Although you're superior over me, we talk to each other in a friendship way. Then out of nowhere, you tell me to break out of the country and into more countries. Past iceberg, into rivers, where the ghost of childhood haunts me. Walk the roads my forefathers walked, climb the trees my forefathers hung from.
We're back. We're going to go right into 86list.com. Laura Wirtz, 86list.com with the hot job of the week. Laura Wirtz, are you there?
I'm there. How are you, Jason?
Laura Wirtz, go ahead. Hot job of the week.
Woohoo!
All right. This week's hot job of the week comes from the Girondori, which is April Bloomfield's New York Times star oyster
bar. Speaking
of
Ken Friedman.
In the Ace Hotel. The Girondori is looking for line cooks and oyster shuckers. They're looking for applicants who are passionate about food, able to multitask, and prepared to work hard. And these positions start immediately.
Now, to give you guys a lot of credit, you were mentioned in the New York Times. They picked you up in the dining section about jobs that were out there, and the job that was out there was there was a shortage of oyster shuckers in the city.
That is right.
And they brought you guys up. So are you guys seeing it? Do you think it's because of the morning after, or is it just the fact that the fact of all you guys?
Absolutely, Jason. Absolutely. You know what? Like, a lot of people are responding to, you know, the segment on the site, so, or on your radio show. And then with our New York Post article, we're definitely getting a lot of traffic.
Laura Wirtz, 86list.com. What else is going on out in the city? It's kind of, it's everyone's gearing up for something, for banquets, for staff. You're seeing a lot of traffic. We spoke the other day, and you were talking about you're getting a lot of hits, obviously not from the morning after, but there's a lot of traffic out there. Anything you see other than oyster shuckers?
Certainly. Right now there's a lot of positions available for baristas. You know, I think people are ready to start drinking a lot more hot drinks when it gets cold outside, so they're looking to bring in baristas for the cold weather.
Laura Wirtz, 86list.com. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Also, I wanted to say hello to Damon Wise.
Hey, how are you? I'm very good. How are you doing?
Now, I'd like to preface this by saying
very well. It's nice to talk to you.
Yes, totally. On the radio.
Laura Wirtz and Damon Wise work together. Chef, where did you guys work together?
At a craft restaurant.
And Laura, where were you? What were you doing at
craft? I was a craft. I was a pastry cook and pastry sous chef under Karen Masco and Damon Wise.
Yeah.
No, I think we need to reveal, and Laura, we doesn't really want to talk about, she's like 86list.com, but where she's working currently is a conflict of interest, myself included. But you run two restaurants, pastry programs in New York City, high-end restaurants, and I just wanted to bring that up, that is what you do. You're not just some random person that decided to start a thing called 86list.com. You work in
That's
the city
right.
and have a lot of connections. You work with Chef.
I'm in the industry, probably more than full-time with two restaurants. plus working on the website. So
thank you.
We try to stay current. We know what's going on.
So hot right now. we're gonna go right back into Monkey Bar. And you know, I was a little nervous about the interview because I do my research and I do a bunch of different research. Obviously, I do the Google and Wikipedia, but you know, that's kind of obnoxious stuff. And I call a lot of people that I know that have worked with both individuals. And I have to say, it was really great, positive stuff, and just about talent and.
I mean, holding our breath right there, Jason.
Obviously, there's the other side of it. But listen, anyone that doesn't work in any industry, I hate to bring up Steve Jobs because it's the obvious thing to do. It's like, high end or just people that are looking for perfection is the cost to get into the room. And that's one of the things you brought up about Apple. And I feel like that is true about a lot of restaurants, to work in a New York City restaurant, any restaurant, you need 100% commitment. It's like going to battle or war. You need to know that people are behind you, and that's the cost to get into the room. And sometimes people yell, and that's just how it is. And the best part about restaurants, if no one has ever worked in them, are it all ends at the end of service, and it just ends. It's just, and then the day is a new day. And that's one of the things that I fell in love with it when I was 14 years old, starting in this world. But to make light of everything, I wanted to talk about just some old dishes that have been on the Monkey Bar thing, and I don't want to go too far into it.
Here we go.
No. The only reason why I'm bringing this one thing up is because you had a dish that was talked about a lot, which was meatloaf. And I guess there was
Nora's meatloaf. Yeah. We've heard about this.
Oh, it is. Forget it. I don't want to talk about it. I don't want to be like everything else. Moving on.
Hey, Jason, we actually have a call-in question for these guys.
Are you serious?
Yay.
Okay. Well, as long as they're normal. All right. Call in. Who are you?
Hello.
Who's calling in? Who is this?
Hi. My name's Sarah. I'm calling from Connecticut.
Connecticut is very vague.
We're probably Sarah.
Hello. No, I'm calling from right around.
Hello?
Oh, we lost her.
Do you guys, I wanted to thank the engineer crew for doing such a top job today. Yeah. Whatever, we'll come back to her, not a big deal. No, I want to move on because I hate doing those obvious, typical questions, but that was what I found. Chef, is there, I looked at the menu and it's had your voice. I mean, I looked at it. I mean, obviously, the first thing you put out there is not going to be completely across the board stuff because you need to sort of get in line payroll and buying and purveyors to deal with and all that stuff.
Employees.
Staff. What are the hardest things that you've noticed in sort of coming into a new place that have been established that you've found?
The hardest thing.
Whether it be.
I think. The hardest thing is to get the customers to believe in what I'm doing. Yeah. I understand about Monkey Bar and I understand about their regular clientele, but they have to give it a chance. They just can't come in and see the new menu and say, throw their hands up and say, oh, this is it. I'm not coming back. Because eventually there's going to be something for everyone. We're going to build the menu. We're going to build the beverage program so that we're going to cater to these people that have been coming there for years.
Okay.
It just takes a little more time than a week.
Yeah.
To do these certain things. So I think that's probably the biggest challenge.
And Belinda, how do you field those problems?
He gets to be downstairs and I have to be upstairs.
a lot of people. There's a lot of loyal customers.
It's been pretty amazing. I'm not going to lie. We have people that come in and sit down and they say, oh my God, I've been coming here for 20 years and I came here tonight for Clams Casino and you don't have Clams Casino anymore. I mean, we definitely do everything we can. I keep their glasses very filled with wine.
And you should hear us in the
their
office.
Their spirit of choice. But anybody who has given it a chance and tucked in and tried something that's outside of their comfort zone, despite it not being Clams Casino, has been super excited and really loved it. So, it's a little bit of a leap of faith right now, but I know that once everybody knows that they're coming in for smoked fettuccine with caviar and uni instead of Clams Casino, it's going to be happy.
Yeah. But, on the other side of it, it's interesting and fun for you guys because it's obviously the other side of something that maybe you haven't seen for a while. You deal with high-end restaurants, whether it's Clicchio and Sons, or you're working for Dom Clicchio, or the Modern, and people come in, and there's no discussion at the table.
No.
This is what we have on the menu and stuff. So it kind of gives you a different angle on maybe just dealing with customers and then sort of building up a base. Do you see that?
I think it's, the front of the house really has to be on their game through this transition. It's definitely not easy, and it's getting people to change their opinions and their perceptions, and, changing a culture is probably the hardest thing there is to do, right? I mean, we had a boat that was going in one direction, and now we have to turn it around as quickly as we can. And
this is the Titanic.
It's been a couple weeks. Yeah. Let's rename that boat.
I'm sorry. That was a horrible...
Jason.
The Queen Mary something.
Oh, okay.
I was there the other day, and I had a great time. I mean, it's epic. You walk in, and there's these old drawings of like monkeys like jumping around and stuff. Has the cocktail list changed since you guys have been there?
Significantly.
We brought on
Julie Rayner, the owner of Flatiron Lounge and Pegu and Lonnie Kai and Clover Club, and she's put in a really sick list of classic cocktails so far. So we have the first 10, and there's swizzle sticks and cobblers, and I didn't know as a general manager you have to approve the purchase of 3 different types of ice machines and all kinds of crazy stuff like this.
The cold draft.
Yeah, I always tell her, ask me a wine question, I'll feel smarter. But but it's been really fun. So we have these really cool pre-prohibition classic cocktails, her interpretation of those, now available in Monkey Bar.
Now there's 2 things you guys brought in. I want to talk about that, and then we'll head on. But the first thing, Chef, you brought in a mason jar here. Could you talk about it?
Yeah, it's duck liver mousse that's been marinated with cognac and pink peppercorns and shallots, and it's been emulsified with butter. And on the top, there's a layer of basically sweet and sour shallots. This is going to be a smaller version of this. This thing is huge, if you could see it. We're going to do a smaller version of this for the bar menu.
Okay, so you're going to have a complete... That makes total sense. Did they do that before?
No, and this is a preview for you. This is not even on the menu until tomorrow.
We brought it to you.
Well, I was out last night with a friend, and I carried this around in my hand because I didn't want to disrupt it, and they're calling it my duck liver baby all night. it's traveling quite a bit.
Well, this caller is calling back, and she's desperate to talk to you guys, so let's pass
Sarah.
It through.
I'm just so desperate.
What happened up there?
I was driving and I had to pull over and make sure I was being safe on the road.
So you know who's in studio. You've been listening. What's up?
I do. I was calling because I've been to their first restaurant, the Waverly Inn, but I was always looking for someplace new to go, and I was wondering what their favorite dishes were on the menu and things that I should be looking out for. And someone who comes into the city quite a bit, I'm always looking for something new and interesting, and I was wondering what their opinions were on the menu.
Wait, so you are coming in for business, or what's going on?
Well, I come in frequently. I come into the city.
Oh, wow.
What? Yeah.
He cell just phones, ate a bite man. Of the... Oh.
All the dishes are great.
Yeah. I was thinking, I'll let the chef feel
wow.
that.
this is amazing. I apologize to everyone who's tuning in for all the dropouts and stuff. But let's go. All right, so Chef, sorry for cutting you up before to go into this caller. Guys, please don't let her back in. I don't know what's going on her phone. Apparently, she's on. She bought like a 2-minute phone call or something. Belinda, you brought some fine champagne here.
Yeah, I brought because we believe bigger is better for the wine bottle. So it's a Magnum Vermeer Rosé. I didn't know how boozy everybody was going to want to be this Sunday afternoon,
it's
but we look like we're being pretty boozy. So we brought this to go along with the duck liver mousse, but we're also finding that the El Raval is quite delicious with all this pickled situation and the duck liver. So.
Thank you. Now, El Raval is one of our sponsors here, and we did not pay Belinda Chang anything for that comment.
No, we didn't. It's delicious.
With this dish, it's good. The El Raval.
Yeah, I think it's that fun game where you can find a white, a red, and a sparkling wine that's delicious with the dish.
Did you read anything about the El Raval?
I didn't read anything, but I think it's quite tasty.
All right, so once again, thank you guys 1,000,000%. I want you to hang out in the studio at least to the end of the show. I'm honored to have you guys both here. I've followed your careers, believe it or not, over the past 5 years. And to the fact that we got a chance to have audience with you here at the morning after. And from the bottom of my heart, I know how hard you guys are and how talented you guys are. I wish the best of success with Monkey Bar. Any sort of things we should follow or websites or anything before we move on?
Come in and check it out. You can find the menu at www.monkeybarnewyork.com. Of course, you have to type all of that out, but we're there.
Chef?
Well, we'll be there. Come in and check it out. And there's more to come. If you come in in the next couple of weeks, there'll be more to come in the next months or so.
And for my end, for general listeners who eat out, like whoever in Connecticut with the bad phone, that area where there are is just a great place to be during the holidays, just walking around. And Monkey Bar is an institution in New York City. And I want to thank both Belinda Chang and Chef Damon Wise for coming in here.
Thanks,
we're going to move on. We're going to take a break. We're going to come back with Mark Trumpor, who's running the marathon next week. He's going to talk about his diet. Morning After. Roma, 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 Gaga, ooh la la, what you be romance? We're back. Morning after. Wow. What's going on? we're actually all revolving with the El Rival and the duck pate or duck mousse or what am I looking at here? Okay, cool. Now look at that thing. It's great. I feel like it feels like New England in here with the weather, and I feel like there should, you know, I've seen jam and stuff in jars. You know, going to college up in Maine. And so we're going to go into our final segment here. I have a good friend who actually, he's a contributor. When we have Nathan Mivrald from Modernist Cuisine, he's going to be a guest in a week or two. He's going to call in. You're actually our tech guru for the show, but you're expecting a child anytime soon, Melissa Sargo and Mark Trumpor. So you've kind of taken a step back with, you know, obviously dealing with all this stuff, but you're going to provide us with geek questions to ask Nathan on top of myself, asking the, you know, the correct temperature of cooking an egg and, you know, and all that fun stuff.
We'll nerd it up some. No worries on that.
Now, Mark, you're running in the New York City Marathon next week.
Yes.
Okay. I wanted to have you on because that's, you know, obviously a New York thing, but is there any other like diet? What do you eat before? What are you eating?
Okay,
before?
So I am a classically slow and fat runner. I'm not a very good runner.
So you're not like Prefontaine.
I'm not planning on breaking any records, even for fat and slow guys. I'm probably going to be slow.
And I will say, on behalf of the Morning After, that's great because then you can call in between 3 and 4 when you're finished.
Exactly. That's my game plan. Actually, is to try to do a call in from the course. But one of the things that's funny is that they actually have in the paperwork for the marathon, do not make phone calls from the course. It's dangerous.
After you're done.
No. While you're on the course.
Oh. That's
it's a very New York problem to have, I have to say.
It's a huge problem every year.
Yeah, I mean, can you imagine how much more irritating the subway would be if we had reception down there? I'm so glad that we don't.
Oh, and it's happening.
Yeah. Oh God, I hate.
So what are you tonight network. Before? What are you eating? Are you going to be like Lance Armstrong? Are you going to Dulce Vano?
No, more
pasta?
more like Floyd Landis, a couple of shots of whiskey, and then actually, my nutrition has already started to some extent. I mean, as
nutrition, attrition,
a little of both. As most people know, I am not afraid to drink a little bit, and in the lead up to the race, in the 2 weeks leading up to the race, I'm really not drinking in my, you know, full crazy way of sometimes doing that. So that's one thing. The other thing, though, in the last week in the lead up is I'm waking up early in the morning, so at like 6 a.m.
Okay.
To eat oatmeal.
Okay. Are you eating like a McCann's Irish cut?
Yeah, basically like an Irish cut oatmeal like McCann's.
Okay.
And I don't want to get into too much detail about it, but running is kind of hard on your intestines. And okay. So it's important to make sure that you are as regular as possible so that you're not carrying any extra weight with you while you're doing it, especially when you're planning on running for, I mean, when you're planning on being in your target heart zone for,
yeah, you could drive
me
to Boston in the amount of time.
Yeah, exactly. For me, certainly. You can get to Boston and probably hang out in Copley Square for a while.
Okay, so we're going to have you, we're going to monitor you through the morning after throughout the show. I'm going to have to bring a computer because I don't think they can handle it in the engineer booth. we're going to do that.
Yeah, I'll make sure that my actual position is updated from my cell phone.
Okay, nice. That's great.
And I am bib number 45650.
45650. Anyone wants to follow Mark Trumpor next week, we'll be following him on the morning after.
The
and you will call
guy.
In, even if you're not finished between 3 and 4, you'll give us a call.
Oh,
I
yeah,
don't want,
definitely.
Okay, cool.
Oh, I don't. Look.
But this is an LLC, so you're only covered under $5,000.
They also tell people not to wear headphones.
Okay, cool.
And have you watched the marathon? Like, everybody's wearing headphones, so I'm sure a lot of people will be calling from the course.
And we also, beyond that, you are, as a producer, helping produce on the show, and Nathan will be calling in, and I'll be doing an interview with him about modernist cuisine. And we spoke briefly about just kind of geek questions to ask him, because he was a chief technologist at Microsoft, when they were just exploding, and he co-wrote the Road Ahead with Bill Gates, and the entire Google Earth was a program that he wrote before and was purchased by Google. Give me one thing I can ask.
I probably would have I'm working on more of a deep technical list of things that you can needle them with, but I would probably have some questions about the .NET framework and if it was put together specifically to make it hard to hire people to do that work or not.
Well, that sounds really interesting.
trust me on this, if you're trying to hire a programmer in the New York area and you need .NET as a proficiency, forget it. It's harder than getting an oyster shucker.
On that note, my name is Jason Colucci. This is The Morning After. I want to thank all of our guests today, Chef Damon Wise, Belinda Chang, General Manager of Monkey Bar, Lee Schrager, just the runs every big festival in New York, L.A., now South Beach. Keith Braga, who's doing a thing on... what are you doing a thing? I'm just kidding. Maxwell Plums. Matthew Bourgeois for shooting the show. Bennett Jaslik for doing the producing of the Monkey Bar segment. And also Jack Inslee for helping out in the engineer booth and the executive producer of HeritageRadioNetwork.com. I'm Jason Colucci, the Jason Colucci at Twitter. I don't have any other social stuff, but that's about it. Tune in next week. Drew Nieporn, I think Jimmy Bradley, a bunch of other people are going to call in. Thanks again. Morning After.
Woo-hoo.